Hey guys, Lewis just wanted to let you know two things before we get into today's episode. The first is a little apology. It's that we are testing out some new recording software. Some of you may have seen these little new minute-long clips that are going up on our social media advertising the podcast. Because we're trying out this new software, when we recorded this episode, my microphone went a little bit clippy at times. I've done my best to edit it out so that it's still as listenable as it can be. There were so many good nuggets in this conversation that I really thought it was worth still putting this episode up, even though the sound quality might not be our usual standards. So apologies for that one. The second thing is to say a massive thank you to everybody that's supporting us on Patreon and on Spotify. So many people have signed up. I ordered, if you are signed up for the end of November, we are sending out stickers packs from the Conference Wars songs. And so many people have signed up that I'm actually going to have to order a second batch of stickers. So if you have signed up on Patreon as a subscriber, or you've signed up on Spotify and you don't get your stickers for a little bit, it's because there was such an influx that I've actually had to order a second batch, and those will be with us as soon as possible. So thank you again to everybody that's supporting us on Spotify and on Patreon. You can get those stickers still if you're there before the end of November by going to patreon.com/childrentheforest, or on Spotify, clicking on that little padlock button, and that gets you signed up. And I think the lowest one is only about £2 a month. £2 a month, we do like four episodes, that's loads. If I was you, I'd do it for 1 month. Listen, do it for 1 month, right? You get stickers, so that's £2. For £2 you get stickers. You could go back and listen to all the bonus episodes inside that month, and then cancel it. I don't care, just do it. £2 for stickers and all that content for a whole month. It's amazing. Thank you to everybody that's supporting us, though. It really does help with our costs, like equipment and booking in this time, and all the books that we buy and read and sort of digest for you guys. So thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoy this episode about learning stories. And I'm Lewis.
This is the Forest School Podcast.
Let's go! We're in.
Yeah?
Oh, there's so many faces.
I've hidden all the faces now, so I can't see nothing.
People, we're on multicam. We're trying out different software, and we can see each other. I can see four of one's face and four of my face. It's quite...
I can't even see your face
from
now.
Multiple camera angles.
I don't like it. No, I do.
One of those things, isn't it? It's a bit like I've always... I would quite like a head tattoo just up the side behind my ear. But as I've discussed it...
What?
No, just like another mandala thing, like on my arm.
Oh, like, I thought you were, yeah, were going to say with a secret message that says, I hate you, or something. You could just turn your head. You're like, I don't like you.
It's slightly around the back, and it just says, I've stopped listening. So if I turn my head and start looking at something else, people just get the message scroll across in front of them.
Yeah. Or like no behind one ear and yes behind the other. So you wouldn't have to answer.
But then you'd shake your head. Maybe
that means
on the top
you don't
of my
know.
Head, because I've got real estate up there. Oh,
yeah.
I can just...
Yeah. Have I told you about my favourite tattoo, my friend I used to work with? He just had the word fancy in massive kind of carnival circusy type letters on the back of his neck.
Wow.
And the trouble was I couldn't stop myself from every time I saw it going, ooh, fancy. And it really annoyed him. Like, it obviously had meaning for him that wasn't the meaning I was taking out.
Sure.
But it was really good. I'm fiddling around, very fiddly today, and we are talking about learning stories.
Learning stories.
Which I've just come upon. So I'm going to start off by saying I have done some reading on this and I'm like excited about it, but there might be listeners who already know loads about this and might go, oh, you've missed out this part and you forgot to talk about that. So this is an emerging interest for me. It is not something I have studied for hours and hours and hours, but I will do because it's flipping cool. And it is a way of, it's an assessment for learning. Did you do that in your like teacher training? Did you talk about the distinction with assessment for learning? So if you're from the world of schools, then you will know what that means. But it's kind of like...
sometimes it is a fancy way of saying we're doing a test. Sometimes it is like a way of not being like, oh, no, no, the test isn't for us. It's about assessing the learning. Like, yeah, but you did that test last year with all these groups when you weren't doing assessment for learning. So you've just put any, but this is genuine assessment for learning.
This is genuine. And I'm really, really interested in assessment generally because I think it's completely whack. In schools right now, it is like the worst part. That's what I'm, this is my belief. This is my like, it's my beef. One of my big beefs. And
German's big beef.
2023. That's a jingle.
That's an air horn.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's a cow.
A cow?
This is your big beef.
Why? Oh, I get it. Okay, nice. So, oh my God. Right, what am I saying? Okay, I think I'm going to hold the thought that I was going to say. I'm not going to talk about my amazing solution to this assessment problem. That can wait. Right. And I've probably already like bored listeners with it before. But assessment is fucked up. It's not done right. It's shit. That's what I'm going to say. This is a cool thing which has come from New Zealand, Aotearoa, and it, I think if you want to look further, and I might be buying this book, a book called Assessment in Early Childhood Settings, Learning Stories by Margaret Carr. But I haven't read that yet. What I have done is looked at some websites, including tomdrummond.com, where he has written about his process of learning, writing learning stories. He is in America. And he's got some examples there. And basically what it is that the adult who is an observer of their children, in his words, shares a tale of emergence, speaking to the child, to the child's family, to guests, and to ourselves as observers and educators. A learning story builds upon the tradition of stories told around a campfire. There's no right way to tell a story, but a story of learning always begins with the learner's initiative, where the emergence begins. The child or children start on their own without cues or direction. And he goes on to say that the stories are always positive. They're always about good things. Nothing negative is said or implied about any child. And the tale progresses through the stages of engagement. So you might notice a child becoming engaged with something, and then intentionality, so causing something and going forward in time. And it could be one incident in one day, or it could be the same kind of interest or engagement over several days. And the idea is to be really attentive and to capture all of the sort of elements of this engagement for a child. Mm-hmm. And so it would go initiative, engagement, intentionality, representation, benefaction and reflection. And you would include yourself in the story. So I observed you doing this, doing that, doing the other. And the idea is then that you're writing, he says he writes it as if he's writing to another adult, although he does address the child as you throughout. So in other words, he writes it at a kind of academic level where another adult would understand, even if the child is very young. Mm-hmm. He would expect them to sort of gain an understanding of what he's on about over time, over rereadings as they get older. So it isn't kind of written at the child's level of vocabulary necessarily. And so he just describes what he sees the child doing. And then at the end, he writes a paragraph, what it means when writing about the significance about what he saw. But he says he often finds that really difficult. And at that stage, he often needs the help of another adult or another practitioner. And so he says personally, he uses film of the child doing whatever they're doing. And he says that's a really integral part to it, that he will take a film and then he will take stills from the films to kind of to illustrate the learning story. So obviously if he's sharing that with another practitioner, then they don't have to have been there. He can show them the video and then he asks for their help with interpreting kind of what it means. And so that people's different perspectives can be included there. And obviously he says that he can't tell what the child is feeling, or he can't tell what their intentions are. He's really careful that he doesn't try to guess, you know, what it means for them. It's like, you know, what it means for him as an observer. And then the end is about opportunities and possibilities to describe what adults, including parents, could provide next, and what's, you know, what are the springboards they could offer, or what they think the future may hold. So it's kind of almost, it's as well as an observation, it's like, ah, so we might do this in future or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that whole process made me really think about forest school, because I think for loads of us as practitioners, we are doing this all the time. Like when we talk about the cycle of like observation, reflection, planning, this is what we're doing, but we don't necessarily share it with parents. And, you know, we might do at handover, or we, some of us might share photographs of what the children are doing. And some people in school settings might have to do their own form of assessment to share with families for forest school. And I'd be really interested to hear what different people do, especially people who do work in schools. You know, if you imagine like a child getting a report home with like subjects and then some writing, whatever, you know, do any schools actually have forest school as a topic or a subject on their reports, and what does that look like? And it sort of also feeds into that whole thing of like, how do we know what the impacts are upon our, you know, learners through our practice? What are we, how are you evidencing learning? Like this whole, you know, field of forest school research is so tricky, because a lot of it is very subjective. It's very like anecdotal. And I think this is a very interesting way of recording what you're observing in a way that is very easy to share with families. So Tom Drummond talks about translating a learning story into Chinese for a family whose first language is Chinese and they don't speak English. And the effect of like the grandfather, I think, reading this learning story and just crying and just being so full of joy that here was something that they could really get an insight into what their child was doing at their setting. And I thought that was really, really lovely. And obviously this is written as an early childhood sort of process, as many of the like most interesting and best approaches to sort of education, I think, are. You know, they're the most sort of related to forest school, aren't they?
If you're enjoying the Forest School podcast, we wanted to let you know about the ad-free episodes and exclusive bonus content that you can get by joining us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/children of the forest today and become a Patreon, you get ad-free episodes of the regular podcast plus bonus things. Plus, when we have guests coming on, we try and get a little bit of a heads up and shout out there so that our Patreon supporters can ask us any questions that they want of those guests before the interview takes place. So head to patreon.com/children of the forest. We really appreciate your support. It's still very free down at that end of the education scale, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or freer, I should say, because lots of people will say it's not free. We're underdoing these things, but comparatively, Can I ask? Yeah. So you've done a little bit more research in this than I have. So I have seen learning journeys done, and we used to use software when we ran a nursery, a preschool, kindergarten, which had. Sort of the way we used, I think it was Tapestry, and it had photos, and you would mark off things that were being achieved from the early years curriculum in the particular photo. So, you know, you'd go through, oh, I've got these photos of Jeff, and then you'd go back through and go, what things is Jeff doing in that photo? So, okay, I can tick that one off, I can tick that one off, I can tick that one off. This feels slightly different to that. The same way that it's observation first, and then that's the thing, the big thing I think that both of these have in common is it's like observing, you know, things that happen for the most part initiated by the learner, and then later going without intruding on the process as it happened, this is what I saw, and it's either this learning story or it's tick boxing, you know, they did this and this and this and this and this. But sometimes there was, I think my own experience when we did the tapestry stuff was like a feeling of not really feeling like it was valid to have repetition. And I'm not sure if I'm explaining. I'm going to try now. So if you had someone who was coming and week after week after week, you were going, yeah, here they are. And every morning they come in and they really want to play a chasing game. So every morning, every week, the parent gets sent home. Here's a photo of them running, and I ticked off socialization, turn taking, impulse control, and after a while you go, I don't feel like I was doing this right, because I'm just going but then also it feels like the opposite, to go the other way and go, I only ever write down things that are completely new and groundbreaking for this child. And so someone who's maybe having a consolidation phase gets nothing written about them, or somebody who is really, really keeps going with something but hasn't quite made that breakthrough to tick that next box that I have to see, they're not getting the same observation. Whereas this story technique feels like you can... It's like, yeah, observation and feedback without that kind of top down or external thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. What I really, we'll put the link to this page on this Tom Drummond website on the link to the podcast, because I really like it. Because at the end, after he sort of explained what the process is, he then has several alerts like, but whilst you're doing this, these are some of the things to watch out for in your process or your kind of state of mind while you're doing it. And one of them is
a story is created in order to complete developmental items on an external form.
That's it. That's it. And he's kind of described, why are we allowing external systems to interfere with this? It's nothing to do with external systems. You know, it's about the child. And he sort of ran some workshops on doing these learning stories with lots of different teachers, and one teacher observed afterwards about themselves and said, it's changed how I observe. Instead of my focus centered on looking for children to do a listed item, I am being open and waiting for something amazing and new to emerge. So instead of, which is what exactly I thought the same as you about, you know, observing children and just like going, oh yeah, I've basically memorized the like checklist boxes for the relevant, you know, age appropriate development stages. Oh, they've just done that thing, now I can tick that off. So you're kind of like, because you're watching for certain things, especially something where you're like, oh, I haven't managed to capture any evidence for that bullet point, so I must look out for that. That inevitably means that you're missing loads of other stuff that's going on, because you're watching with a focus as opposed to being completely open and ready to see something that is emerging.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And we wanted to let you know that we want to hear from you, the Forest School community. If you've got questions, topics you'd like to explore, books you want us to review, share your ideas and thoughts with us by emailing childrenoftheforest@outlook.com. Your input is what fuels our episodes, and we can't wait to connect with you. And kids pick up on that, like whether you're, like you're saying, that thing where you get to where you go, I've done this and it's so high in my mind that I've got this list memorized, and so if I even out the corner of my eye I see X happening, my attention goes there and I whip out my camera or I whip out my phone and I and whether or not you attach like verbal praise to that or tangible praise, like giving out stickers or whatever, like even if you go, okay, I don't want to do that because I don't want to be judgmental about it, purely the fact that you are whipping at, you know, going, oh, got to catch that, there is going to be some sort of understanding of things that are worthwhile, because that was worth taking, that was worth Gemma taking a picture of, so it must have been something I did there that was worth my picture being taken. Whether you like or don't like your picture being taken, there's a value judgment to that action. Whereas if you...
Which I guess you can't get away... If you are going to do it like this guy describes with video, then I guess you're not really getting away from that, are you? But I think what the difference with this is that you're sharing it with the child, which I don't think, you know, obviously kids could look at their tapestry thing with their parents, but it's not addressed to them. It's not saying, I saw you doing this. It's I saw thingy, you know, it's for the parents. It's not for the child. Whereas this includes the child in their learning journey in a very different way to anything that I've ever seen before. That you were talking about kind of praise, and again, there's something really, that's another one of these sort of alerts here about, like, while you're doing it, be really aware that you're not judging what you're seeing. So even including praise, so saying that, oh, what they did was good or beautiful or wonderful, and, you know, just, he just puts this so well, which we, you know, we talk about this all the time, and we believe this, but that thing about when an adult, when you praise somebody else, it implies that you have higher status than that person. I love the sentence he's written. I carry the expectation with me to sprinkle stars on those below me who will benefit from my favor. Like, yeah, that is exactly it, you know, and it feels so, like, if you're someone who does praise a lot, it feels so good when you're sprinkling those stars on people, because you see their lovely little face, like, oh, I've sprinkled some stars on you. Have more stars. You know, I'm really encouraging them. But actually, it's bullshit and it's not authentic. And, you know, and he says, it's a child's work is not really beautiful. It's not really a good job. There isn't a job. Like, that's well, like, the amount of time you hear so many hours, oh, good job with the thing. Good job. What is the flipping job? There is no job. There's no point. There's no purpose. It's not like
I want to keep a running tally somewhere. I've considered keeping a notebook in my, like in a backpack or something, because sometimes it happens at work and sometimes it's just when I'm out. And I really enjoy hearing the phrase good and then something. And sometimes they're insane. So I've heard like, I think I've heard like good breathing. I think I've heard like good looking. Good looking is one that's like, I want to keep a note of all the verbs that have been and try and maybe then make some sort of collection of like, what's the most obscure thing, verb I've ever seen someone praised for.
I can see why people do it, because it comes you know, and I've definitely done it. And it comes from a place of positive reinforcement, you know, we hear that talked about a lot, and it's about noticing, isn't it? It's about showing the child that you're noticing and that you're appreciative. And I think that we can still do that. It's just about trying to extricate the praise element, isn't it?
Yeah.
So he gives an example of like, I like how you thought of watering the plants by yourself. So you can completely see why that adult would say that, because it's like, whoa, that is pretty, that's pretty cool. Like, I want to acknowledge that you did a thing without being told to do it, and that you've got a bit of executive function and all, you know, and thought for the environment there, and it's all lovely. And he says, yeah, that's okay. You might feel that, but if you say it, that judgmental form restricts a child's freedom to be, because it shows that, it tells the child there are some behaviors they do that are more praiseworthy than others. It shows the children around them who can overhear that praise going, oh, okay, so I didn't get that praise. So the thing that I'm doing right now must be less good than the thing that that other person's doing right now. And you cannot escape that. So in sprinkling the stars on one person, you inevitably are not sprinkling the stars on these other people. Yeah. And what they're, and there is no job, like there is no behavior that is better than others. We're talking about children who are learning. Like, if you are implicitly suggesting all the time that there is, like, there are jobs or behaviors that are better than others, that's really damaging. And it's so awful, because you're doing it from, as I keep saying, you're doing it from a place of really wanting to help that child and really wanting to make them feel good. But it doesn't work that way. And that's really hard to get to wrap your head around. And so I think the whole learning stories thing, and through other books that we've read, you know, like Alfie Cohn and stuff like that, is about, you can notice, but trying to keep the judgment out of it. And that is so flipping hard. Like, even the things where you, where we might say, like, you want to acknowledge that a child did a really pro-social behavior. Mm. And so you want to say, like, afterwards, oh, I noticed that so-and-so was really happy when you passed them the scissors. That you might say is like noticing without praise. And therefore you're just kind of drawing your child's attention to the effect of their actions on others. And you're also kind of letting them know, like, I am observing you and I'm there, I see you. But it still kind of has an implicit praise element because
yeah,
you're just commenting on the stuff that you thought was good. And I don't know how you get around that then. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I suppose if you're also commenting on times where thing, like if you are genuinely just walking around like a declarative parrot robot and going like, I can see X behaviors made this person happy, but you're maybe equally going, I can see that X behavior is making that person feel scared, or I can see X behavior is, like, if you just said, I can see this has made someone happy, then yeah, you're only commenting on the thing. But if you are declaratively announcing all the effects of many different types of behavior, then it's gonna, then you're not the thing of like, well, when do Lewis and Wem tell me about what I've done? Well, it's not just then, it's also a hint. Oh, and they do that, and they do, so they're just there to reflect things. I was also going to say, it occurred to me that, so these learning stories and also lots of what we do in forest school involves not assuming what's going on inside a learner's inner world. And so these learning stories have got that an advantage, because you are declaratively saying, I saw this and you know, the effect was this, or blah, 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 blah. And even in, so that example of like watering the plant, being like, I like that you've watered the plant, it's very likely that maybe they weed themselves a little bit and that reminded them of watering, and so that then made them water the plant, and then they water the plant and you go, I like that you remember to water the plants because they're thirsty. And like, did a fuck, I just pissed myself a bit. Like, you can really send a mixed message. I'm being really, that's a really silly example. But the point being that, like, you've praised an inner world working without being able to see it. Like, you know.
Yeah. And he talks about this in this article, that, you know, assuming motivations or assuming anything about someone's inner life, which is, again, another thing that we might do as practitioners all the time. Like, oh, you worked really hard at that. Or so-and-so was really determined there. It just, he says, it sort of oversimplifies it and alters the meaning of the story and can be confusing to the child because you are completely assuming that. And it is something that we do all the time. Like, we would go, oh, you really had resilience there. You, it was hard to do that, but you carried on. Like, that is what we think we see, and we're thinking that we are, acknowledging and seeing and witnessing and trying to do it without praise. But maybe, they did just piss themselves. Maybe they didn't. Maybe they were just absentmindedly doing something again and again and again, and actually they weren't trying hard or being determined. And then therefore it's really confusing for the child that you've just told them that they worked really hard at that thing, and they were like, no, I didn't. Is that what working hard means now? Yeah. Okay, right, that's weird. Just making assumptions is easy to do, hard not to do, but important. Yes, go on, Matt.
Hey, podcast listeners, if you are enjoying the show, there's a small but very powerful thing you can do to support us, and it's completely free. If you can take a moment to rate, review, and share the podcast, it means the world to us in terms of sharing all the wonky goodness that we're getting up to with more and more people. Thank you so much to everybody that's already left reviews. We do read them and try and reply to people if we can. Sharing it and getting the word out to more people really helps what we're doing. Thank you all so much. Devil's advocate, because I know this, people will have been listening to this and this, you know, will be bubbling because it bubbles in my head as well. Tapestry, super efficient. We've already got a big workload. Maybe we don't have the time to write that. You know, you and I have written down on blackboards to show parents what a group of 10 learners got up to in a 2-hour forest school session, and we have run out of space on, you know, and I'm talking like 4-foot by 2-foot blackboards. Mm-hmm. We've run out of space on that. Are you gonna, I'm embodying this argument now.
Yeah.
Are you gonna say that for every, I don't know why this person's got an accent, they do. Are you gonna say that for everything we've done, right?
Everything.
Is a bit,
Cockney.
What's Stacey Solomon's husband called? Joe.
Yeah, anyway.
Joe.
Him.
Are you gonna say, right?
Yes.
This is. Are you gonna say, right, that we've got to write down a learning story for like everything they've ever done? That's like 200 stories a minute, 1,000 minutes in a session. I've got time for that.
Well,
and scene. And scene.
I don't think I've ever heard you use that accent before, ever. I enjoyed it. I think you should do it more.
Maybe I should do the next song, yeah, in that accent.
That's not offensive to anyone, is it?
It's gonna, okay, maybe my next song is gonna be Chaz and Dave.
Okay.
Esque.
When I'm making mud pies, that kind of thing. Yeah, and the writer acknowledges that and says when he does these workshops with these teachers, that is some of their feedback, that it is time consuming, that is unpaid work because they don't have enough time out of the classroom in order to do this, and especially if you're kind of including the part where you share that with the child, you get it home to families, you get that, and you know, he describes also how once it's gone home, that then the family can write a response and you can read that, and it's like a, you know, back and forth, which obviously is ideal and perfect and great. But it is time consuming. Another article I was reading about is about a software called Educa. So it's another e-portfolio tool like Tapestry that people can use. So obviously that's going to kind of save some time there a little bit because you've got an actual software thing that you can use, and it's laid out in that way that makes it easy.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if anyone in the UK is using this at all. I'd love to know. I'd really love to know. You know, and this software has got like an editor and makes them really beautiful and all of that stuff. So yeah, it is long.
I think that's, yeah, super valuable. You said a little while ago that for the learners, like the, so, and this is potential learners. Do you think would be of having a, some of our learners that have been with us 7, I'm sure it won't be long before somebody approaches a decade with us. What might the effect be, do you think, of having, let's not take it a decade because that's super big, let's say you had a year of learning stories that somebody can go back to when they get, you know, they get to 14 and they're having a little nostalgia trip and they go back through and they've got a year of learning stories, even just one a session for the, you know, the year that they did forest school, and what effect that has compared to other types of recording and assessment. Like, so at one end of the extreme, how does that compare to just having attainment goals, you know, met, not met for all these things? What's the connection to those things? What's the, you know, feeling when you look at it? And then I suppose, but also then go, let's unpick that first and then I will talk about the other half that I think I can see. So like, what do you think people would get out of? And I think I know the.
Sorry, you keep cutting in and out a lot, so I'm hoping that I have heard everything you've said. So as you were saying that, I was really imagining like the impact on our learners if we started doing it, and actually something occurred to me which is quite negative, because we are in, I think, the fortunate position where we don't have anything assessment-wise imposed upon us. We don't have anything where we have to use a certain system for this, and our families are, you know, because we're working primarily with home-educated children, our families aren't in that kind of expectation that they want a written report or something. And obviously the channels of communication are always open, and we share photos, and if somebody wants to, you know, chat with us, then we chat, or if we think there's something that really needs discussion, then we would invite parents in. But sort of, I guess, and therefore the children aren't used to having an assessment or a learning story or anything kind of presented to them. Apart from like photos, they might say, can you take a photo of this thing? Or can I see that photo you took of the thing whenever it was? Or sometimes we might find old photos and show them and go, oh, look at this, was you like four years ago. My gosh, look at what you're doing, you know. And so we do that quite often. But I do think there's some, because this is such a like, the whole learning story thing is an observation, like a detailed observation. You did this, you did this. I watched you do this. And you share it with the child. That could be pretty creepy. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's got that. I really think, like, because Forest School isn't a classroom, and you don't arrive at Forest School with that expectation that someone's going to be observing your learning or wanting to see you make progress, you know. It depends where you are. Some Forest Schools, you may feel like that, especially if it's in a school setting. But to then be presented with like, I was stalking you and I watched what you did and this is the thing. I think in the same way as sometimes it feels really intrusive to take a photograph or a video of someone, even when they're doing something super cool that you really want to document. Sometimes it's too intrusive, and how it might make someone feel really quite self-conscious if you said, you know, here's this story about you. So I think the impact could be potentially damaging there. So I think it's got to be, when I heard about this, I was like, this is a potential idea for settings that are already using some kind of formal assessment. And this is better than other things that might be used. But also I can see that if children were used to it and they were amenable to it, or they asked you for it, you know, if you said, I've heard about this thing, would you like me to do this for you? And if they were like really up for it, then I can see them reading learning stories of them a couple of years ago. I can see them wanting to do that, especially if it's accompanied by photos. I can see them going, can I look back at that? In the same way as my kids, you know, if someone's made them a photo book or something of a particular event or a visit or a holiday, they will spend time looking at that or looking at old photos of themselves. And that if they read the learning story that you've done, that there might be a bit of like, oh yeah, I remember doing that. Yeah, I was really, really interested in water at that time. And that's why I was doing that, you know, and I remember that. Almost like remembering a play cycle and going, oh yeah, you know.
Do you think you could change this then? So the steps that are in this one of, you know, the I noticed and then what it means and the opportunities and possibilities. Do you think it would, because so there's going back to this thing about it being slightly creepy and slightly like
voyeurish,
uncomfortable, voyeurish maybe. There's a bit in, people that haven't listened, we did an episode a couple of weeks ago with Naomi Fisher, and there's a bit in her most recent book where she's talking about reasonable expectations of privacy, and she's talking about that filming in public is, for some background, I'm going to get back to this, I promise, for some background, that filming in public spaces is legal in the UK because you cannot expect to have a reasonable degree of privacy in a public space. Like, that's the degree of privacy is, yeah, you might end up on film because people can take pictures. Conversely, in the home, so taking pictures of inside someone's house, but then like through a window, that's when legally in the UK you get into like, nope, you are owed a degree of privacy in your own home where you can, if you want, not have any photographic stuff made, any recordings taken, all this stuff. And in her book, she's talking about whether children have that same experience, because in the home, they are potentially being photographed or videoed without their permission and without their consent. And so then you go, well, where do children have a reasonable expectation of privacy then? Do they, if they don't have it in public, but also they don't have it in private? I'm sorry, for the private bit, I mean parents and guardians photographing. Mm. I don't mean people through windows. But that thing of reasonable expectation of privacy, I think, is a really interesting phrase to pick up and pull into this space. You know, reasonable expectation of privacy in a in different forest school settings, I think you will have varying degrees to which a level of privacy mm-hmm. is to be expected. So I think if you are in a school setting and you're on the school field, you would probably expect that degree of privacy to be the same as it is in the classroom, in that you're in the classroom, the teacher probably takes pictures of projects while they're happening. In the classroom, the teacher might, or, you know, people working as teaching assistants and all these different people that are there might be recording what happens. And you might even see teachers making notes mm. or writing down your answers and go, yeah, that's a reasonable part. So you can pick that up, you can put it into forest school and go, okay, it's reasonable there that, you know, that person mm. is doing the same level of observing, or a different mm. teacher is now observing me or taking pictures of whatever. We're in a home educating setting, and this is, or in a non-state education setting, I think you've then got a different level of an expectation of privacy. I think that's yeah. where this comes in, is to whether you're overt about it or not. You might have a home education setting where it's very overt that, like, the leaders there are recording, they are assessing, they are doing this thing. You might, I think the fuzzy middle is if you pretended you mm. were when you weren't, or pretending you weren't when you were.
The other thing is the flatter status. Yeah, yeah.
Hierarchy.
That is the other difference, isn't it? That you, go on.
Well, if I could, because I just finished the thought, because what I was going to get to was the, and again, it ties into that inner world thing, in that reasonable expectation of privacy. I think if you were looking back on someone had collected learning stories of what you got up to, and you look back and it was a piece that had written and it said, I saw you start to build castles out of the building blocks. It seemed like you were having a great time. You did it for, you know, 15, 20 minutes. So I think I will see if you want to do that again next week, or I might put some more blocks out. Get rid of the what mm-hmm. it means paragraph, because that is where I think I would I'd quite happily look back at something where a person I worked with said, oh, you were doing X this week. I might put Y in. And then when I look back and I go, God, Y was the thing that really kicked off my love of this. Or, yeah, I remember why it really didn't land. Or you go, oh, is that why you were doing Y? Oh, okay. That doesn't make sense. Because but once you went like, I saw you playing with the building blocks. I think this is because your motor processing had gone up and you blah, blah, blah. And I think that you might have been, that's where it's, I think the root of the ick,
and I wonder if that's so, how the people imagine that going, or whether it's like it's the what it means thing. I know exactly what you're saying.
Hey, lovely forest school people. I know people listening to this, you are bored of doing damper bread. You are bored of doing marshmallows. You're probably bored of doing hot chocolate. So I wanted to let you know about the book Forest School Cooking that I've written. It is half recipes that are going to take you away from the boring marshmallows and damper bread that are driving you mad, and into like cool meals and things on sticks and fast things and slow things. And the other half of the book is all about different ovens and stoves and things that you can build to cook in different ways. I know we personally have had it where you realize that what we're doing this week, oh, we're frying something on the frying pan. What we're going to do next week, we're going to fry something in the frying pan. So building up loads of different ovens like rocket stoves and pizza ovens. It's all in the book, and it helps you to grow your cooking from something that the kids are just waiting to get the sugar into them to something that they're actually enjoying and getting a bit more out of that cooking. So you can find your copies on Amazon or Forest School Cooking and take your cooking to the next level today. But you could have it in two. You could have it in two bits. You could, if you, I don't know if this software does it because I haven't looked into it. But potentially, if you had a version that went into like for the learner, this is what I observed you doing. This is what we might put in future for you, and then a version that goes either in, like stays internal, which has those bits, but also has the what it means, and that like a parent or a carer might have access to that if they want it. But for the learner, there's a separate recording of these stories without any.
I am just thinking about whether we as adults ever experience this, and I think we do sometimes, especially if we're doing a job like teaching where we might have observations of our lessons or whatever by our bosses or our peers. And so my one of my tutors in my teacher training, he basically did his observations like this, I've just realized. So at the end, so you know, he would come from the university and he'd, you'd know he was coming, and he'd come and do an observation and have lots of feedback time afterwards. And you'd be like super nervous, obviously, and be like, oh God, what are they, what's he going to say? Is he going to say it's good or rubbish or whatever? And then the first time it happened, I was really surprised that he just, it had no judgment. There was no judgment attached to it at all. He had written a learning story, I'm now realizing. So it was a very, it was just a narrative of what happened. So I saw you do this at the beginning of the class. You addressed the class and said, good afternoon. And then you asked them a question, blah, blah, blah. This kid did this, this kid did this. As the children were doing that, you walked around the desk, blah, blah, blah. And so as he was like reading it, sharing it with me, I was like, yeah, but I was waiting for the judgment. I was like, and was that good or bad? Are you writing that down because you thought that was a good thing that I did? Or are you, you want to challenge me about it? Like what? And it just never came. And he just left lots of pauses and gave lots of eye contact at certain points so that I could go, oh, did I? Oh, right. Okay. Or yeah, I wondered about that because as I was doing it, I thought blah, blah, blah. So it was an invitation to reflect, and it was a time for questions. And so, and then at the end, he might have then posed some questions like, what do you think your journey next is going to be with that child? Or, you know, that really open questions that were there for reflection, which is kind of like almost like the what it means bit, like what's next sort of thing. But again, without any judgment. So when I've gone to see our Forest School level three trainees, that's what I've tried to do as well. And I've observed them and then had feedback with them afterwards. I've tried to kind of follow that model. And I was just wondering about like with an older child, obviously it'd be very difficult with a very young child. But to sort of do it like that and to have opportunities for reflection with them so that you can kind of clarify. So instead of you going, I think this means this, and next time I might do this, that with an older child or someone at Forest School, you could go, yeah, so I noticed you did that, and leave some space and them go, yeah, I really, I was, what I was trying to do is to see if the thingamabobby was da-da-da, or actually I was only doing it because my mate told me to and I didn't really want to do that. Do you know what I mean? So to give them a voice in it, and that you could then record afterwards and chat together. I mean, again, like this is something, can you imagine actually doing it and taking the time out of that child's play and whatever to do this?
It's no, like... but there's something that's been growing, I think, in the back of my mind for a long time, which is like, I think I am at a place in my journey where I've gone from feeling like the principal, the sort of guidance that Forest School is a reflective practice, right? And that it involves reflection. And then you break that down, it's like reflective from the leaders. It should involve reflection from the learners. It should involve blah, blah, blah. And so I think early in my journey, I definitely had like a hard line, like reflection in the session at the end, summative assessment, summative assessment. And that is like core, vital. That is the you know. And as time has gone on, I think I've moved in lots more ways to be like, okay, but what's appropriate level of like there's bits of it. So like, what's an appropriate level of reflection? Is it going around the circle and asking, no, I don't think that anymore. Is it, you know, a group? Is it like, so there's that part of it and thinking of different ways to do that assessment, reflection, sorry, at the end. And then there's also a bit of me that goes, okay, well, is reflections at Forest School just summative, or is it the moment-to-moment conversations? Do you have many mini mini reflections? And because in terms of spoons, yeah, the end is the worst part to try and get anybody to reflect, or you know, then it becomes very top down to do that. And then the association of reflecting in quotes becomes like this like thing that you have to do at the end, even if it's done in a fun way with dice or a song or a thing, like it becomes a like, I would like to play a bit more, but I have to do this thing now. So I'm not saying this is the answer by any stretch, but I think it is interesting to keep coming back to this idea of what is reflecting and what is observing. Because again, observing is that thing of like, oh, I wrote down everything that the kids did. Well, actually, maybe it's about writing down a few things they did, or maybe it's about writing down in a certain way what they did, or it's about writing in a you voice, or in a they voice, or in a we voice, or just, I don't think you could ever look at too many angles on reflecting and observing, because they will all go into this big melting pot of like, I don't think this is, like you say, sitting down with each learner in a group of, let's say you've got an ideal, you know, 12, 15 kids, sitting down with each one of them, recounting a learning story, leaving pauses.
Could you imagine, if I was like a class teacher and I also took them out once a week for Forest School and I had to do some kind of assessment with them, I think I would be fighting for this. And I think I would be fighting, because kids in the classroom also have to do reflections, don't they? They have to, you know, look back at their year and then write down what they did well and write down what they want to learn next and all that kind of schmizzle. And so if you're already plotting time and space to do that kind of thing, to do it through this framework, I think, is so much nicer.
Go on. I'm imagining that you could use this framework, though. So in my head, and maybe we could try this. So if you again, I don't think it should have the what it means in it. I think it's the, hey, I saw you doing this, wondered if you wanted to do more of this next time. But if that went, so one thing, one little learning story like that went home via the parents, so you're in one way, you're letting them know what something that's happened in the day, so you know, you're reassuring that thing of, it's always in the back of Forest School people's heads, what am I really doing, what am I really providing, you're conveying that, hey, I saw them doing quite a lot of time with this, or you know, you address it in the you, so you go, could you pass a message on to little Dave, I saw you doing X, Y, and Z today and you really seem to be having a lot of fun with it, would you like to do some more of that next time? Or if I set that up, if I've got an idea that maybe we could go over here with it, what do you think of that, Dave? Right? So it's going via the parents so they can see the thing, but you're giving somebody a chance to reflect honestly in hopefully what is a safe space, because they're at home, they don't have the peer pressure of like, God, I have to say the thing. And you're, again, that's where I was trying to get to with my journey of reflecting, is like, does it happen in the session? No, I think it could happen 2 days after the session when they're at home and the parent, you know, this is dream world, right? This is dream magical world. Parent goes like, oh, I just got a message from Lewis. It says, hi, Dave, I saw you playing with those blocks loads. Would you like to get them out next week? And maybe we could build a thing with it. You know, maybe we could see if we can make this, and then child can respond. And
there would be varying reactions to that. I think some kids that I know would really work for, and I still think it comes back to the privacy thing for some kids. That some kids, I think, would just be like, not only have you been watching me, you are now telling my parent what I was doing, and it's about I can see it going both ways. I can see some people being really positive about it, going, oh, wow, yeah, like this is really cool that they've contacted my parents to share my experiences and they're seeking my thoughts on this topic. And I think some kids would just be like, oh, my God, like in the same way that they don't want to reflect at the end of a session, being like, dude, that was like 2 days ago. Don't even remember. Why are they prying into my home life? I'm not at forest school now. Why are they involving my parent in it? I can
that
see also that
point.
Happening
that fair.
For some children. But that does lead me on to something that kind of has come up in this article and is kind of coming up now, which is that it does, if you're doing this and communicating with parents, that it shows more of your process. So especially something like forest school, where not many adults will be, unless they listen to the Forest School podcast from episode one to episode 100 and whatever.
They're the best ones, though. The ones that listen are the best ones,
course,
objectively.
You know, revealing the kind of hidden world of forest school practitioning is, and kind of showing, you know, like when you might have done a handover with an adult and you want to share something, but you know they won't quite get what you're sharing.
Yeah.
That you want to be like, this was amazing, and it was probably to do with playing or something. And then because the adult doesn't work in forest school and wasn't there, they might understand from what you're saying something completely different. Because you don't have the time and the space to really describe what this means.
Somebody ran up and that whacked me in the back of the leg with a stick. Now, you don't understand. They never
exactly.
normally play with me. They don't normally speak to me. The yes. fact that they whacked me in the back of the leg with a stick was the highlight of my day, right? That level of like, how do I explain how happy I am
Absolutely.
That somebody came and whacked me in the back of the leg
exactly.
with a stick?
That's exactly what I mean. Or something where someone really like used their voice to talk about something that they weren't enjoying. Like, so,
I heard you saying to someone the other day, like, oh, they said in a big voice.
Yeah. And I was like,
no, I don't.
Great,
stop
but
it.
But if I relay it to a parent, it might sound really not great. But it is great, like, because of the setting, because of the processes that we use, like.
Which you could argue, which is why the what it means paragraph is in there to explain those things to somebody not necessarily in that mindset or in that pedagogy
and
or in that world.
You also spread the cult, right? Because you go... you send this home and go, see, that's why this shit works and you should do all this too and do it all the time, like, I don't know.
I heard someone describe the scientific process recently, you know, the circle that goes round of like researching and investigating and hypothesizing and then you know, experimenting and testing and repeating. And they'd literally just divided it in half and just put, fuck about, find out. Because half of this
Love
job
it.
Is fucking about and then half Love. Of it is finding out.
That's perfect.
What'd you do at forest school? Oh, just fuck about
it,
and find
isn't
out.
Isn't it? That's it. That would be a really good place to end this episode. But I just want to really quickly say as well that this, you know, if we're sort of going, okay, well, this is a great idea, but it's probably unlikely that we'll ever actually do it because let's face it, it probably is. What about, though, if you wanted to do some forest school research, but you weren't sure how you were going to collect data? That would also be a good thing, I think. Like, it'd be a way, if you were going to write a little article about something that you've observed in forest school, to do it in a way, because also, whenever I've thought about doing this, again, it comes down to this, like, privacy aspect of things. It's like, I am interested in this thing and these observations of these children. And obviously, you do the ethics of it and you get people's consent and you get people's parents' consent, blah, blah, blah. So you do do that. But even still, I sort of feel slightly weird that you're kind of like, just sort of publishing, like, observations of these people that you know so well and you're in this little community. I mean, Tom Drummond said, get this for a sentence, that the whole idea of education, basically early education, is to attend to and convey what it means to grow and become a fully realized human being in a community of others. Like, it's pretty good, isn't it? So what? Then you're, no judgment, no assessment. It's just attending to it and then convey what it means. Like, anyway, that you're in this community and then you're going, yeah, now I'm going to like write about you and analyze you and all that stuff. Even though I'm doing that all the time, it's, yeah, it's just
commodify
a bit weird. But
the stuff,
if
isn't
you
it?
Did the learning story thing with the involvement of the child, then I would feel a lot more happy about that. I'd feel a lot more like, and I've shared the observations with you and I've chatted about it with you and then I'm going to analyze it. Do you know what I mean? And when I've done research in the classroom for my master's, that's what I did, was like, you know, set an activity, got the kids to do it, read their writing, and before I analysed the heck out of it, I interviewed them about it and went, I noticed this, I noticed that. How did you feel when you were doing it and what did you think of it? And that's where the like, oh, moments came from, was in the chat with them. Anyhow.
Oh. Yeah. Talk about, find out, guys.
Goodbye.